Hey guys, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. Thank you for tuning in to episode number 3. We have a real treat for you today. Dr. Ryan Jackson, the self-dubbed underdogs advocate and creator of the competitive teaching model. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer. And now for our Bauer trivia question. While driving through a Wendy's on the south side of Chicago, the drive-thru employee asked if Daniel was a movie star. Stay tuned. The answer will be revealed following today's amazing podcast.
Hello, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I am honored and thrilled that you are listening today. Today's guest is very special, Dr. Ryan Jackson. Ryan B. Jackson has been an educator at Maplewood High School in Nashville, Tennessee for 8 years, specializing in one of the nation's top priorities, urban education. As an assistant principal of the Academy of Energy and Power, Jackson provides a high-quality servant leadership to a staff, student body, and community that have historically been underserved. Jackson is committed to ensuring all students receive their civil right of a top-notch, cutting-edge education, regardless of race, class, gender, or ethnicity. Furthermore, Jackson's competitive teaching model is generating considerable buzz as the model's penchant for motivating students while producing undeniable student achievement gains has helped turn around a once-failing high school. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Dr. Ryan Jackson.
Hey guys, Dr. Ryan Jackson here from Nashville, Tennessee. The intro kind of said it best. I've been 8 years at Maplewood High School and have coined the moniker, the underdogs advocate. It is my life's work to serve students that have historically been underserved and lift them up, you know, and a hand up instead of a handout. And that's it. That's it in a nutshell.
I love that phrase, a hand up instead of a handout, and just this inspiring idea of taking care of people that have been historically underserved. Thank you for doing that. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Oh man, the short of it is roughly around the time of the recession. So we're going back to 2007. I was in a marketing department. I was a copywriter, and before that, I was a fledgling film producer. So writing was my background. I started tutoring a couple of guys, a couple of kids, actually my hairstylist, and fell in love with the process, sort of the synapse connections, just the syntax and kids getting excited about their own writing. Long story short, the market took a dive. It was a two-man marketing department, and I was the copywriter, not the graphic designer. So I saw the end coming, and you know, I'm sitting in a cafe one day, and there's a newspaper, and on the front of it, it said a hard to fill schools offering combat pay. And, you know, I was just fascinated by that kind of title.
Yeah.
And, you know, lo and behold, you know, I had taken the English language content praxis test, passed it. So this was already sort of bubbling in the back of my mind, but I reached out to this principal of this high school that was on the front cover of this story.
Okay.
And man, she brought me in for an interview, you know, within 3 days, and I was hired on the spot.
That's awesome. How would you describe your leadership style, Ryan, and how did you develop this style?
Servant leadership, hands down. I have a mentor who's my current mentor and has been for the past 5 years. You know, he made it clear to me from the beginning. His name is Dr. Ron Woodard. Made it clear to me from the beginning, make allies, not enemies. And ultimately, that ties into this servant leadership mindset, you know, that I'm here not only for students, not only for community, but for the teachers that I serve as well. I mean, I am here to be the ultimate resource, the ultimate catalyst. You know, I'm here to push everyone in the right direction. I'm a firm believer in the ideology that a rising tide lifts all boats. So if I had to pick one leadership style, I'm a servant leader. I'm a hands-on, get-in-the-trenches kind of guy. You know, I'm in the classes. I'm in the hallways. I'm communicating with kids. I'm building relationships. So servant leadership, hands down.
Got to point out 3 points right there. One, that you're always visible. Two, leadership is all about building relationships. If you don't have relationships, you've got nothing at your school. And most importantly, too, did you catch how Ryan said that he's the ultimate resource in the building. Who would not want to be around this guy as a leader? That he is there to serve, that he is the ultimate resource in the building. That is what leadership is all about. What is the vision for your school, Ryan? And how do you accomplish this on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. I mean, in a nutshell, we fly by this. You know, lives will be changed every day. It's no mystery anymore that we Maplewood is in East Nashville, Tennessee, which is kind of infamous at this point. It is going through a bit of a gentrification process, but the reality is we serve students in the most impoverished area of Nashville. All right. So, you know, you kind of get that cliche that the community sends you its best. And I get that. So everybody that walks through my doors, I realize that this is the best East Nashville has to offer. And it is my firm responsibility to lift these students up, giving them a better life going forward. So lives will be changed every day. Now, we can get into a more dense mission, but that's really it. I mean, we are here to serve the underdogs. We are here to be your advocate and give you a fighting shot at a better life, whether that's college, career, ACT prep, job shadowing, internships. You know, you can run the gambit with that.
Yeah, because success isn't just measured, you know, with the ACT. You provide multiple outlets, you know, for your students. And I hope students of the podcast wrote that down. Ryan said it twice. Lives will be changed every day. That's such an inspiring idea. That should maybe be phrased as a question. What am I doing to change lives every day in my school? Put that on your mirror. Wake up every day. Look at yourself and wonder, how are you making that a reality in your school? What has been your worst leadership mistake, Ryan? And what did you learn from it?
Worst leadership mistake and what I learned from it. I am an energetic, forward-thinking idea generator. And, you know, as the assistant principal in the Nashville high school model, I'll just give you a little bit of insight. Yeah. We have what's called the Academies of Nashville. So essentially schools within schools. I run my own mini school inside Maplewood High School.
Gotcha.
That's called the Academy of Energy and Power. So I've got a team of teachers, a guidance counselor, et cetera. And project-based learning is a big initiative of mine. It's something
awesome.
That I just wholeheartedly love.
Yeah.
And so 2 years running, we've taken gold at a regional STEM competition and the district's
wow.
project-based learning expo. All that being said, you know, there are times when I feel like maybe I get a little too excited, maybe push into overzealous mode a little bit. And I've got to make sure that I step back and I'm not as hands-on when it comes to not only the preparation, planning, et cetera, but I just, man, sometimes I can't shake my teaching roots. And so that being said, I guess my greatest leadership mistake is maybe celebrating a little too much with my teacher, just in terms of the excitement and sort of just that frenetic energy that I seem to carry with me all the time. And there needs to be, there still needs to be kind of a line there. You draw that line. And I'm learning that as a young administrator.
Okay.
That's definitely in the arena.
Have you put anything in place then in your day-to-day practice to help you, fulfill that, what you learned there?
Yeah, most definitely. I think it starts with tempering, not necessarily expectations, but
sure.
Tempering the excitement that can come with seeing a vision fulfilled. And maybe it's just because I'm sort of new to this somewhat. This is only going into my third year of administration. So now that I've experienced a little bit of success in terms of, you know, like I said, with the project-based learning pieces, I just channel a little differently now than I used to before.
Got it.
The high fives aren't quite as high.
What has been the most challenging aspect of your position as a school leader?
We can get specific, and that is, again, when you're serving students in poverty, you know, and I mean, you know, at times destitute poverty, you know, we have a 70% transient population. So 7 out of my 10 students, you know, have been to multiple high schools, right?
Wow.
Students come, go, they leave again. So I'm dealing with a culture, with a climate where, you know, you may have heard of like Eric Jensen's work on teaching with poverty in mind. I mean,
sure.
we live that daily. So I'm training, retraining teachers, building relationships and rapport. I mean, we take it to another level. You know, the big zeitgeist now is restorative justice. You know, I feel like you know, veterans like my mentor, Ron Woodard, you know, we wrote the book on restorative justice. We practice this stuff daily. But with all of that, you know, just comes an intensity that is more challenging. You know, I feel humbling almost talking to a guy that's working in Chicago, you know, about the intensity and how tough it can be serving in an urban school. But the reality is when you are dealing with this level of socioeconomic class, you know, there's just the innate challenges that come with that. But we take it head on. So along with that, you then have to deal with kind of the political fallout from it. Sometimes you got to deal with a community that's been underserved. The trust isn't always there. So you're repairing those relationships on the fly at times. All of that culminating in a day by day grind that is about changing lives every day. And some of those lives you're talking about are in severe need of change and help.
Yeah. So, you know, your kids are coming from a difficult circumstance, to say the least. You said 70% of the student population is transient, and that a key to that, their success is also building those relationships. Is there a specific anecdote, story that you can tell about one kid that came in that you were able to turn it around with him or her?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my very last year of teaching, I was teaching sophomore level English in an AP Lang class in a journalism course, and was lucky enough to get a kid who'd been expelled his freshman year, and he returned back in my class. But it was obviously that this guy was just innately bright, and was probably a lot of that escape behavior, a lot of that pushback was because he wasn't being challenged enough. What I did was I sold him on the fact. This thing called Mikasa Tsukasa, which we were talking about how to teach kids in poverty about home ownership, right? Real estate, okay. Home ownership, gentrification, just kind of knowing property rights, et cetera. And, you know, this kid got his head around the idea of gentrification and running people out of their neighborhoods. And some of that stuff has come full circle within the last 3 years, and we're really seeing that play out. But he bought into this. I mean, he not only bought into the ideology, but he bought into the project-based learning, hands-on piece, getting him, kind of working with him, molding him to speak in front of a larger audience, a public audience.
Oh, awesome.
And, man, I just watched that kid, we'll call him Mr. Malone. I just watched Mr. Malone graduate, you know, this past May. And a great feeling, man. Exhilarating, you know, to be able to watch that guy who's got a family that many of them, you know, have done time, and just again, destitute poverty, and then you start hitting them with skill sets, man, that are now preparing them for life outside of, you know, secondary education. It's a beautiful thing, man.
That's why we do what we do. Thank you for sharing that story. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice school leader?
Knowing what I know now, what would I tell myself as a novice school leader? You know, I'm a hit the ground running kind of guy. That hasn't changed. I think organization is still something that I'm harking back to a couple of years. You know, it can't all be fly by night. You know, I'm an idea generator, but the organization piece, you know, I'm learning that. You know, even with millennials and even with my, you know, with my baby boomer teachers, my Gen X teachers, you know, there's all different kinds of leadership styles that kind of applies to each particular person. So with that comes maybe a better sense of organization on the front end, almost like you would talk about differentiated instruction for a student, right?
Right.
You know, there's a similar tact and approach to that, you know, with leading adults as well and connecting with adults to kind of maximize their opportunities and to maximize their potential. So I think I would maybe go back to those early days in leadership and focus a little bit more on getting to know my immediate staff on the front end a little closer, like you would with a student. I mean,
right.
I mean, I didn't transfer that. Okay. So when I'm coming from the classroom, the competitive teaching model, you know, was built on formative assessments, differentiated instruction, and specifically getting into students' lives, understanding how they think, different modes, learning styles, et cetera. Why I didn't transfer that to adults on the front end, like I've kind of learned to do now in order to maximize the potential, you know, of a teacher was definitely something that I would tweak. If I could go back,
I don't know that you would call the competitive teaching model your secret sauce, but one of my questions that I'm interested in is what sets you apart from other leaders in education? What is your secret sauce? So please, can you go into a little more detail about the competitive teaching model? And if there's anything else that you think sets you apart from other leaders in education, please expound upon that as well.
I'll tackle the second part first. Okay. You know, I'm big on transparency, so I am a I'm just an open communicator, an open door policy. You know, I'm a see you in the hallway guy and have a conversation with you. I'm all about having courageous conversations, hard conversations when we have to have them. But I'm also that underdog's advocate, and that goes for adults as well. So I'm here to serve you. I'm here to lift you up. I get the fact that we work in one of the toughest environments, you know, that somebody can teach in, and I'm here to help you through that. You know, I'm here to help you serve our students to the best that you can. And it starts with transparency. So I lay my expectations on the line. I model what I expect. So they see that. They kind of see me on the front lines. When I say we're on the front lines of education, you know, I'm not leading from the rear or from within. I mean, I'm right there in the front with my teachers, making sure that the job gets done. So right. I would say going forward, the secret sauce, I'm a communicator. Love to communicate, love the transparency piece. The idea about the competitive teaching model is, again, going back to the underdog's advocate, serving in poverty, you know, I needed an extrinsic motivator. That's just the reality. I mean, I'd been dealing with students who'd been conditioned to poor teaching, who'd been conditioned to bad relationships, who'd been conditioned to poorly run schools, you know, low achievement. I mean, you know, the gambit. I needed something different. I wanted to tap in to an extrinsic motivator that would tie into this piece of belonging. I got fascinated and hung up on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I knew that if I could make a student feel like he or she belonged in my classroom, I could start pushing them towards self-actualization, which is just being our best, right? But so many times we miss that. I mean, I think we try with the framework of differentiated instruction, but I wanted something just a little bit different. So what I did was, you know, I took those key components, the formative assessments where I'm constantly giving feedback. I mean, I'm into this gamer, you know, this gamification mode, this gamer ideology where you want it and you want it now. I get it. You want results. You want to see it. So I get that. The differentiated piece where I'm making each student feel unique, feel special. I'm learning who they are. I'm learning how they think. I'm learning how they work. But then I needed this one nugget, this one gem. And I just tied in. I came across this piece by Sigmund Freud, you know, where man's innate desire to hunt and kill to survive has not vanished at all, merely transformed into his innate desire to win. Okay. So what I started doing was I had a mentor of mine, a guy named Ryan Murphy. He taught right next door, taught English and AP Lit. And he was a mentor several years older. And he was humble enough, man, and his ego was in check to the point that although I was new to the game, man, he allowed me to challenge him outright in his class. And we just started these fun class v class competitions. And what took it to another level was, you know, he and I's antics in the hallway. So between class changes, you know, we're kind of verbally sparring and jabbing at each other, just getting kids stoked about writing. And at the time, we were taking a TCAP writing assessment, this 35-minute persuasive writing assessment they had to do. And we would just compete on that and have the kids like, you know, it wasn't kid versus kid. It was class versus class. So now you're talking about a team model. Now you're talking about belonging. Now you're talking about a rising tide lifts all boats, anti-bullying campaign. We don't win unless we all win, that kind of thing. Mm. So the competitive teaching model, the linchpin was that competition piece, was about creating this shared goal, right? This shared vision. And it hung around this rallying around this common enemy. That's who we're competing against. Let's band together. Here's how much time we got before that assessment. We got to train. Let's get into it. It was all machismo, man. And it was a beautiful thing and still is. I mean, we use it even in the academy model now where even on our project-based learning, we'll hark on other schools, man. We'll let them know we're coming for you, you know, even in the STEM world, STEM, you know, right. Yeah. Robotics, engineering. I mean, we let them know, you know, just because we're from East Nashville, just because we're a little impoverished over here, don't think we won't give you the best we got.
You're still winning those golds. That's right.
Oh, buddy, so, we're still bringing home the gold. Yes, sir.
I love that idea of creating a winning culture there. And on the show notes, I'll definitely link up your TEDx talk on the competitive teaching model. Outside, absolutely, least I can do. Is there anywhere else you'd like the audience to go to learn more about your work in the competitive teaching model?
Right now I've got the TEDx piece, and then I do a blog I drop the first Saturday of every month. It's underdogsadvocate.wordpress.com. And July's blog was specifically about the competitive teaching model. So it gives you a little bit more anecdotal pieces, a little bit more of the psychology behind it. And then it also links to the TED talk. So, but there's other cool stuff on there too. Rise of the Visionary Leader, some, just tons of pieces I've done on there. I drop it once a month. So if you could direct them towards that, I'd appreciate the
We'll link that up for sure as well in the show notes. So thank you for just producing that great content to make school leaders better.
Absolutely.
Hey, how would you describe the culture of your building and how was that culture established?
So, you know, this could go on. I'm going to condense it, but roughly five years ago, we got a new executive principal, and the year before that, we had an executive that didn't even make it through the entire year. You know, she ultimately collapsed kind of under the weight of these kind of stressors. And I mean, that was one of the most challenging years of my life, you know, where the culture was at an all-time low, the school. And this is, as the kids would say, this is real talk. I mean, the school was in the midst of chaos. Okay. It was inches away from a state takeover. And then, this weird thing happened. This guy came back named Ron Woodard to be the executive principal, who had served as an assistant principal my first year there. So we had that connection off the bat.
Right.
And once he came back, I mean, expectations were set. It was clear this guy wasn't going to be run off. It was clear he wasn't scared by urban education. And I just got empowered by that. And yes. you started to see the culture shift. I mean, he was holding people accountable. So don't get me wrong. There were lots of hard conversations on the front end, you know, because what we found was, so many times, man, in schools like ours, where you're just able to hide behind poverty. Okay, you're able to make too many excuses about students, community, home lives. I mean, and I'm just not an excuses kind of guy, and neither is he. So this culture started to change when we started taking ownership over what we do. When we started making people toe the line, we started talking about accountability, transparency. So now that we've weeded out some of those types, if you will. You know what? Sure. What you're left with is this bottom indelible crust. I mean, people that are like committed to serving the type of vision, like lives will be changed every day, that are willing to go the extra mile, that do it way more than just a paycheck. And I know we all say that, but I'm talking about people that are committed, that are serving in a school where someone was murdered at graduation. Okay, this is like real stuff. And so now that we've had like a couple of years of consistent leadership, and this is one of the biggest selling points for leadership, you know, we're now looking at going into year five of consistent leadership with 3 years straight of the same AP staff in place. So assistant principals have now been together for 3 years. So we're really kind of firing on all cylinders. We're only 2 years removed from academic gains in every single category. I mean, double-digit gains in Algebra 1, you know, huge gains in English. So I'm just starting to see that the culture has not only adapted with the leadership style, but now teachers are seeking us out. I mean, people want to come work at Maplewood, right? And millennials are a group that I love. I mean, so these young upstarts coming in the game, they're excited, they're passionate, they love the energy. You know, they're big on the social media piece. I'm big on branding. Our school's Twitter is a big deal for us. So Just that culture piece, getting people excited about being on the front line of education, being excited about being on the threshold of this new educational paradigm that is right before us, man, that we're staring into kind of this void and we're creating it as we go forward. So that's I mean, quite honestly, where the culture is now. So it's night and day from where we came, you know, from people like teachers playing Uno in classrooms, you know, to now being in a culture where People are excited about graduating. People are excited about project-based learning. People are excited about adopting engineering and coding in schools. It's totally different, my friend, totally different.
It all starts with expectations. So kudos to you for having those high expectations for your community and rightfully pointing out that poverty is not an excuse. Our kids and our communities can accomplish anything they want, but they need leaders that care. And the other key, too, is that you're consistent. For, I think you said, 3, 4, 5 years, the staff, the leadership staff has been the same. You can't leave, you know, you can't turn your backs on these communities. You got to be in it for the long haul. And because you are, Ryan, you're making a huge impact. I so admire that, what you're doing there in Tennessee.
I appreciate you saying that. I was going to add one extra piece. You know, I think for too long, principalships have kind of been analogous to the NFL, right? You know, after 3 years, it's kind of like chopping block time. And we've been able to break that mold. You know, we're, like I said, we're going into year five, and I'm just starting to see these exponential dividends the longer that we've been there. So you're onto something with that, man. Just the consistency in leadership has been huge, especially for underserved schools.
Good for you. Keep it up. One thing that I truly believe about leaders is that you have a special talent, ability, that you can only offer you know, to the school. So what's that one thing that only you can do in the building?
I'm from Evansville, Indiana. I'm from the south side of Evansville, Indiana. I grew up in a you know, in a working class neighborhood, and went to a elementary and a middle school that's currently in failing status, you know, in Evansville. One of them about to be taken over by the state. And I say that to say this, you know, my ability to code switch is top notch. I mean, I kind of pride myself on that. I can communicate with any and everyone.
Right.
And so, you know, you see the hair, you know, and other pieces that would at times it kind of sets people aback a little bit until we get into the heart of these conversations. And then they realize this guy not only walks the walk and talks the talk, but they start to believe exactly what I'm preaching here. And I would say that there's just not many like that when it comes to that. I'm a bit unique based on my background, you know, based on now my year served at Maplewood High School. It's about connecting. It's about making deep connections beyond, you know, beyond superficial language, beyond just my ability to apply slang at appropriate times. You know, I'm talking about making students literally, quite literally, feel like they are on your team and that you would move mountains for them based on the persona and the presentation. I don't think anybody touches me in that regard.
Let's get really practical for a moment. How do you avoid distractions and stay focused on the job? And what boundaries have you set up at work to ensure your success?
It's like this. When I get out of my car at 6:30 in the morning and my feet touch the pavement, somebody's asking for something, and it doesn't stop until I leave for the day. So I think you start to see distractions as kind of this, you know, this embedded piece that's not going to go away. So what you start to do is you start to compartmentalize those distractions, you know, and you become very astute at, you know, you become very astute at like creating frameworks for, you're hitting me with this kind of question, and I already know how to deal with that because I've dealt with that 16 times today already. So I funnel that through this particular paradigm over here. Or this is something kind of new, so I'm going to need to develop more time on that. So I'm now going to have to switch a couple of my responsibilities either to my secretary or to a team leader, something like that. So you become a little bit more fluid on how to direct. You become a little bit more fluid on how to you know, inspire others that maybe wouldn't have thought they could do something before because my attention is going to be necessary over here, but this ball can't be dropped over here. So distractions are a part of the game. And I think once you kind of recognize that and start creating game plans for how you'll compartmentalize these distractions, they don't start to overwhelm you as much. Then maybe you're able to debrief a little bit after school. You know, I did take this note from somebody the last year, and that is, you know, it's people by day, paperwork by night. So I'm making sure that all of my conversations, I mean, I'm making those connections, that rapport, getting into classrooms, talking to teachers, talking to students by day. Man, I'll handle emails, you know, I'll handle paperwork, all of that kind of stuff when the school day's over. Because right now I'm face to face, you know, I'm in the trenches, I'm shaking hands, kissing babies, you know, doing what I got to do to make things happen.
I love that quote, people by day, paperwork by night.
Yes, sir.
Now, I know that you're a family man. How do you balance your work life and family?
So another blessing, and I'll just call it that. Another blessing is my wife is an English teacher. I mean, a master of her content. So, who has her own leadership abilities as well. She's kind of really taken off herself and doing her own thing. So with that comes this, this respect, you know, this respect piece, and it's a two way street. You mm-hmm. know, she gets the nature of the beast. She understands my passion. She knows the community that I serve, yet she too is doing her own thing. I mean, she's got those same kind of passions, that same kind of drive. Now, coupled on top of that, or compounded on top of that, you know, we've got a young child and then an older child. So the balance there, you know, gets tricky where you say, you really have to say, well, who am I leading first? You know, and I've got to always come back to that. You know, who am I leading first? And starts with me. I'm a big health nut. You know, I'm a gym rat. I'm in the gym. Health is a big piece for me. And then outside of that, it's lifting up the immediate people around me. So spending our time with the, you know, with our kids, whether that's pool time, whether that's movie time, we make sure we get that in. Because ultimately, I mean, that's my foundation. That's my rock. That's where I gain my strength from. And it's been funny with like the this big social media piece, and you kind of start to share your life story. You're like doing life with more people now. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And as I've started to, you know, be transparent with you, I've got a 15-year-old. And he's obviously social media crazy. So what I'm doing is I just took it upon myself. I'm going to model what that looks like, you know, for him. So he's now going to see this, you know, he's going to see this 35-year-old doing his thing on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera. And I'm going to model what I think that should look like for you. And that in itself creates a very zany kind of balance as well, too, because you're now learning how to connect with millennials on a different stream. Let's just say it's helped some, but the work-life balance, there's no getting around it. It's a challenge, especially when you're as passionate as we are, but man, it takes time to make time, and we certainly do.
So we got the last three questions coming up in the closing of this interview. The first one would be, what is one book every principal should read right now and why?
Oh man, one book every principal should read. I'm big on a book called Switch by the Heath brothers, you know. And specifically there's a piece in there, you know, it's Switch, How to Change When Change is Hard. But there's a piece on there about self-control is an exhaustible resource. And I think every principal, every leader should read that, you know, especially when you're serving in schools like mine. And I apologize. It's hard not to talk through that lens. That's just what I'm used to. But, you know, self-control is an exhaustible resource. And the reality is we use so much self-control on a daily basis as educators, you know, with the poverty that we deal with just the, you know, with the legislation and the political ramifications that we deal with. We're instituting so much self-control on a daily basis that if we're not careful, we either burn out, right, or we snap, do something crazy at work. I mean, you know, something nobody wants. So every leader needs to be cognizant of that, you know, constantly checking the temperature, the pulse of your teachers in the building, constantly making sure that they're affirmed, constantly making sure that they're supported, constantly making sure that they're recognized and rewarded, and understanding that self-control is an exhaustible resource. If you don't pay attention to these key pieces, you can wind up with low retention rates, you know, and a staff that is miserable.
Thank you for that book suggestion. We'll also put that in the show notes. That's Switch, How to Change Things When Change is Hard by Chip and Dan Heath. Is there a tech resource that you have leveraged to be super effective at work?
Tech resource that I've leveraged... No, and that's maybe one of my weak areas. Quite honestly, you know, the organization piece, because I'm in the trenches, because I'm beating the bushes so hard, I'm trying to get my head a little bit more around, you know, more than just Google Drive, but other pieces as well that may help with kind of the management piece. In fact, a good friend of mine just turned me on to, I think it's I'm going to tell you right here, Trello,
yeah. That's what I use for all my workflow.
So Trello, man, I'm just now getting my head around that starting to put like all my project-based learning pieces into that, some of my presentation stuff's into that. We've got a big accreditation coming from my academy through the NSAC piece that I'm putting through that. So Trello is hopefully the answer to that question right there is I'm going to start leveraging that piece going forward.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's something that I use all the time and to manage my workflow and a bigger project to-do list to make sure that I'm on point. So that's a really valuable resource for sure. So now we're at the final question. I told you this one is a little bit crazy, but love to hear your input. You're building a school from the ground up. You are not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Love that question.
Thank you.
I see I'm going to have some fun here, man. I see a multi-floored building.
Yeah.
And I'm going to steal from a couple of people that I'm excited about, my wife being one of them, a guy named Ketrick Newell being another one. He is the director of a Teen Dream Center at a church we have here called Cross Point, which is partnered with my school. And then some ideas of my own. So the school would look like this. It would be multi-floored, and it would be specific in terms of on one floor I would have my STEM academy, you know, and we would do the hardcore science, technology, engineering pieces that I'm very passionate about. Within there would be coding, which I believe is the literacy of it's the education's new literacy. I'm about to drop a new blog on that in a week, you know, about how coding is education's new literacy. So we would be teaching, you know, inner city kids, you know, C++, JavaScript, you know, and just right. getting them ready for this tech-based economy that's getting ready to smack a square in the face. On another floor, you know, I would have my arts academy, and I would have, you know, any and every kind of artistic project going on, from documentary filmmaking to sculpture, you know, to painting, huge, you know, obviously I came from a film background, but I work with one of the coolest art teachers on the planet, this guy named Mike Mitchell. He is at Panthers Art, and this guy has inspired me, you know, about just reinvigorated art curriculum and how that looks in a school that's been devastated by standardized testing. You know, when you start applying art to the mix, man, it just changes things. So you'd have an art floor. And then here's where I'm going to get a little controversial on you, I think.
That's great.
My wife has me sold on this future type of school, man, where we take teen mothers, and it's somewhat modeled after like Los Angeles schools, Teen Dream Center, right, where it's a multi-floored approach, and you know, but one of our floors would be dedicated to not only just serving teen mothers, but it would be seeing these teen mothers through stages of life as their child grows. Okay, so the mothers would go to school, you know, with their children, they're with them while their children are also being taught too. I mean, because what I want to start getting to, man, is systemic change. You know, I've worked in poverty long enough to know that Band-Aid approaches work temporarily, yeah. But we want to start talking about systemic change, man. And I see this floor where, you know, it's no longer positioned that you've made a mistake. You know, I'm a growth mindset kind of guy.
Yep.
I'm big on you know, Nassim Taleb, man. I'm an anti-fragility kind of guy, you know, where we literally get stronger from failure. So, you know, I want this floor where mothers and their children are learning together, you know, and I see my wife there, man, and she's got her passion thing going on, and she's teaching kids and their mothers at the same time and teaching mothers how to be mothers. I would go there, man. I would have to, especially funds and no political ramifications tied to it. You know, I would want to deeply impact that systemic change that we see so often in our poor neighborhoods.
Yeah, that's needed. It's a problem that needs a solution. And, you know, that's one of those things, again, where you're just modeling what does it mean to be a healthy adult and a great mom. So that would be so, so perfect. But Ryan, that wraps it up. I want to thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice for the audience? And is there a great way that people can reach out to you if they'd like to?
Oh, please communicate, contact me on Twitter at Ryan B. Jackson 1. And I think my parting message, you know, would be this. There's never been a more exciting time to be an educator. I feel like we are literally, and I said this earlier in the podcast, you know, we're standing on the threshold of a new education paradigm. And, you know, chronologically, I'm 35 years old, so I'm on that cusp of Gen Y and millennial. So chronologically, history is asking me to lead these millennials, and I'm excited about that. I'm excited about these new teachers coming in. It's just one of the most exciting times to quite literally be reshaping what history looks like, to get on the front end of this tech-based economy that we've got coming up. Man, embrace it. You know, it's noble work we're doing. Educators, teachers, principals, guidance counselors, social service workers. This is noble work. You know, be proud of it. Stand tall on those legs. And let's push forward into the future and do something great.
Well, all right. That concludes today's episode, Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. I hope you had as much fun listening as I did having a conversation with Dr. Ryan Jackson. His TEDx talk and blog will be linked, as well as the books mentioned, all in the show notes. I wanted to let you know that iTunes ranks podcasts based on the listener engagement and ratings and reviews. It would mean so much to me if you would take just a minute out of your time and leave an honest review for me. I'm going to read the top reviews starting with episode 5 and just give shout outs to people that leave ratings and reviews. So thank you for considering that. I have a free gift for you. It's called the 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders. These are just 15 phrases that have really served me well in different leadership positions over the years. So it's an MP3 that you can download for free. All you have to do is text the word phrases, PHRASES, to the number 33444. They'll ask you for your email, you'll get on my email newsletter and you'll get that free gift. So text the word phrases to 33444. Finally, the answer to the Bauer trivia question, the answer is true. I went through a Wendy's drive-thru recently, and the employee asked me if I was a movie star. And I said no, because I'm not. And I don't know why he thought that I was a movie star. I typically don't get that. But he did, and that was a true thing that happened to me. All right, hope you tune in next week. Same better place, same better time. This is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools.